flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth of the Stinking Truth Podcast. The NFL playoffs are here, and I'll be breaking down every matchup as we get toward the big game. Join my co-host Mike Evans and I on the Stinking Truth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Washington Commanders, you see Brian Robinson behind Jaden Daniels in that pistol formation.
Daniels fakes the handoff, throws to the end zone, touchdown McLaurin with his second of the day.
Execution by the Washington Commanders. They have everyone thinking run. They're all lined up there. Their eyes are on the quarterback, and Kool-Aid McKinstry is literally trying to run for his life, chasing down Terry McLaurin. There is no way he can keep up with them, and that is a great pass.
Another banner day for Terry McLaurin yesterday in New Orleans. 7 catches, 73 yards, 2 touchdowns. It was his 4th multi-touchdown game of the season.
How about it?
He's got 11 touchdowns on the season. Washington has not had a receiver go for 10 touchdowns in a year since Gary Clark did it back in the early 90s when they were winning Super Bowls. You got to be thrilled for McLaurin. He has played through awful offensive times here in D.C., bad quarterback play, finally now linked up with a hyper-talented QB, and the results have been very obvious. He goes for those 7 grabs, those 2 scores. The contested touchdown catch early was maybe the second best play of Jaden Daniels' season, by the way. The first, I'm still going to say, is the Hail Mary when he scrambled around for 13 seconds. But that was the second longest play he's held the ball for this year. Over 8 seconds, rolls to his left, back toward the middle of the field, slips and falls and keeps himself up with the ball on the ground. And then he kind of stands up and just throws the ball into space. He didn't throw it at McLaurin. He threw it into a small window where McLaurin was running. Could have been picked off pretty easily, and McLaurin made him right on a 50-50 ball. The second touchdown was a great throw, great catch, tight window again. But that's what McLaurin does. Nobody makes more contested catches this year and over the last 5 years in the NFL than number 17.
He's going to be an all-pro this year, or at least has a great shot at it when he starts to do it. I don't think first team is in the cards. That's a Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson production, if I had to bet. But currently, Terry McLaurin stands 7th in the NFL in receiving yards, slightly behind Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Jerry Jeudy, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he's 2nd in the NFL in touchdown receptions. There's a spot on one of the all-pro teams for him this year, I think. And that's going to be awesome because, it's well-deserved.
People sleep on what yesterday could have been for Terry McLaurin, too. I just tweeted this out. Ian Harditz, who I think is mostly a fantasy guy, but does some pretty good stuff on Twitter, put a mashup together of the 3 misses where McLaurin was deep. So, again, 10 targets in the game, 7 for 73. That means 3 times they threw it to him and he didn't catch it. Those 3 times were an overthrown would-be 52-yard touchdown, lined up on the right in the slot, ran a deep post. He is 4 yards behind a DB at the 7-yard line. Daniels misses him way too far. McLaurin dives, and the ball goes probably like 5 inches past his fingertips as he's fully extended for what would have been a lunging catch at the goal line. So that's number 1. 52-yard touchdown that didn't happen. The second target of McLaurin that was a non-catch would have been a 62-yard touchdown that went off of his fingertips. This was the one where he was wide open. He's got 9 yards of space up against the sideline. This was the one he could have caught because it went off of his fingertips and he started playing popcorn and fell to the ground.
So close.
But again, it was just too far. He's outstretched. You hit him where you should, and it's an easy catch and run for a 62-yard touchdown. And then the third target of McLaurin that wasn't caught was a underthrown 54-yard touchdown if it's thrown correctly. And there was obvious pass interference. It should have been a spot foul at the 10-yard line. It wasn't. That would have been a 42-yard penalty on the PI that was not called. And instead, the Saints got bailed out Adam Peters was actually on the sideline. You and I noticed this.
Yeah, we could see it clear as day.
He comes down in the fourth quarter, like, dap guys up and wins. And he was not far from that play, and he kind of went streamlining down the sideline to go yell at the official.
Barking at, I guess maybe it's the umpire or sideline official, whoever's there, line judge, I don't know what you call him. But Adam Peters gave him a piece of his mind. Looking incredibly handsome, by the way. Excellent pant and blazer game. Wasn't a suit specifically, but it was just a sharp-dressed guy with a great jawline and excellent hair telling the official, sir, I respectfully disagree with your assessment of that play.
Daniels needs to hit one or two of those, right? So you could say one was a PI, and that's true, except mm-hmm. it was underthrown to make it a PI. McLaurin is way the hell out in front of the DB. Throw a good ball, and it's a walk-in touchdown. But I just told you, 52, 54, 62, you add those three catches, Terry McLaurin goes 10 for 243.
Yeah, you add one, it's a banner day. It's the day of his career, right?
243 and five touchdowns. And all three were misfires by Daniels, who otherwise was very solid. Like, I would even say really good, 25 of 31. So you take those three throws out of the equation, he's 25 of 28 in the game. Three incompletions otherwise. But those are, if you lose that game by a point, we're having a different conversation today.
That's right, yeah.
It's like, man, make one of those throws. That's your number one. So, you guys have this great rapport.
So two of them, he put some zip on, which I thought was interesting, right? Just, again, who knows what his eyes saw, what coverage dictated or what he thought was going to happen in terms of how to throw those. But he generally throws an excellent deep ball, I feel like, and that's a strength. And I'd go, here's the circumstance. Three different times, Terry McLaurin will have significant amounts of space behind the defense. What happens? Well, he hit one, maybe two, and, God willing, maybe three. But two of them, it looked like maybe he thought, and I want your thoughts on this, that he had to drill it in there a little bit because maybe safety help or maybe, just kind of the way, timing-wise, he put zip on it. The third one, maybe having been burned twice by that, he goes, okay, I'll give it some loft that Terry run under it, led to an underthrow. So, again, I'm not excusing it, just sort of saying, hey, this is what happens, what it looked like to me.
I mean, watching him now in real time, I'd have to see an all 22 to corroborate that. I just see an open receiver
they didn't
behind
hit.
A defensive
totally.
Back and a quarterback missing him. There's probably good reasons for it. And by the way, throws get missed all the time.
Of course, yeah.
Patrick Mahomes misses them, and so does Josh Allen, who's going to be the MVP, and so does Lamar, who had five touchdowns. So it's not like an indictment. But, I mean, are there reasons? I'm sure. That's football.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the layups as a quarterback. You just hit those, and you're winning Rookie of the Year, and you're in the MVP conversation,
yep.
And your team hung, 34 or whatever yesterday.
Yeah, the good day becomes the unbelievable day.
Right, and you blow the Saints out, and these margins in this league are so small. But I do just want to, more to endorse McLaurin's day than mm-hmm. indict anything Jaden Daniels did, point out that could have been a unbelievable, right there with Jamar Chase and touchdown catches for the year kind of day for McLaurin. By the way, Daniels completed 25 passes. He has now completed 277 on the season, the most by a rookie quarterback in franchise history. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. We will start with Chris, who's in Hyattsville on Grant and Danny. What's up, Chris? How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing? How you doing in the Big Easy, huh?
Good, buddy.
We're holding up well. We've got all kinds of Clary stories we'll be telling that are a lot of fun. We'll get to those as the show goes on. But, we've had a blast.
Is Danny's two-day record in jeopardy, or is he behaving himself?
He's actually behaved himself very well. His performance-enhancing drugs are helping him.
Yeah.
And, he's been working out every morning. I think he's pretty much going – his records are safe, I'll say.
Yeah, there is no danger of near 17 pounds over 4 days. That's not going to happen. It just isn't.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm not sure. Are we doing game balls and guessers? Or I'm not sure of the question. This is very unprofessional.
I mean, people are just chopping it up on the game right now. Well, basically their thoughts.
So
and
I will say this about the whole 2-point conversion scenario. This is exactly how I felt. In my 20s, I had a period where I was not the best driver, and I got multiple tickets, and I had a job where I needed a car. I was on the way to the court thinking, all right, this is it. I've blown it. I've lost my driver's license, or I'm going to be not be able to insurance. And guess what? The cop doesn't show up. That's the Saints missing the 2-point conversion.
Oh, okay. You got bailed out.
Yeah, I got bailed out. Never felt that was a huge winning off the field for me. You guys there?
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate you, dude.
The cop missing court was the sprint out, as far as I'm concerned.
Was like, that's the play call.
I still remember, and I'll still never forgive the Dolphins for this, because I wanted Washington to lose as a Washington fan. Some of you guys don't understand how that works, and I just need you to figure it out one day. But the Commanders needed to lose the game. They were then the Redskins. And I was already kind of – they were terrible. They were 0-5. I think they just fired Jay Gruden. They're playing the Miami Dolphins. It's this awful game. Josh Rosen is quarterback. He gets benched. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in, leads the Dolphins back. And it's exactly like yesterday. They come out of nowhere. They can tie the game. And the Dolphins are so bad that they're like, actually, no. We're just going to go for two, because whether we win or whether we lose, it works out for us. They called the worst two-point conversion play in the history of the world. It was like this, like, bubble screen, but it was way behind the line of scrimmage, and they, like, brought a bunch of people in motion. Like, the whole defense was there, and they had no chance. They got tackled at the five-yard line. If Washington had given up that two-point conversion, they would have picked first overall and gotten Joe Burrow. All right? They would not have been picking second. They would have had Chase Young. They would have had Joe Burrow. I never forget that play. Mm-hmm. It pops up on my timeline once a year or so, and I get mad every single time. Although I can be less mad now if Jaden Daniels is the answer and ends up being, you know, a perennial Pro Bowl quarterback for them at the top of the league. But I bring that up just to say yesterday was such a bad two-point conversion call. This one was a good thing. Because
this was great, yeah.
You needed Washington
to win. Got something going good, yeah.
But, my God, is that an L? Just off the play sheet. I mean, the call, let's all run to the sideline and try to do this super low percentage throw and catch with a bunch of bodies in the area and get a toe tap right on the chalk. Thank you for whatever call that was. Let's go to Vince in Virginia on Grant and Danny on line four. Vince, the Commanders, 9-5 for the first time since 1992. What's up?
Hey guys, love your show.
Appreciate you.
Long time listener. Yeah, I love it. I was born in 72. I grew up watching the Redskins either in the playoffs, winning the Super Bowls, or always competitive. So after 25, 30 years of letdowns, I'm happy, yes. Two things I'd like to mention is, number one, the two penalties on Flowers yesterday seemed bogus. Y'all still there?
Which penalties?
On Fowler, yeah. So I'm with you on that. And I appreciate the phone call and listening, man. I thought the first one was especially egregious. Second one I wouldn't have called either, but I understand, like, maybe a letter of the law, some contact was made to, you know, upper torso or adjacent to the head. I have no idea. To me, my threshold for it, and again, I'll just never agree. I know it went against us, but I think I'm an adult enough that I can call a ball and strike when I see one. My threshold is, if the guy's actively trying to avoid the thing that you want avoided, as by nature of the rule, a.k.a. hit the guy so hard, pick him up, slam him to the ground, roll over on him, and you know, pile drive him into the turf, if he's trying to actively avoid those sorts of things, by, you know, not hitting him as hard as he could, pulling up, sort of, you know, almost moving to the side, which is exactly what Fowler was doing, you just can't call that. Otherwise, nobody can do anything, right? I mean, to me, if you have a, you know, a Goldberg style at the height of WCW, spearing the dude, drilling him into the ground, headbutting his chest, trying to crack his sternum, yeah, throw your flag by letter of the law, no problem. That one, to me, was just so stupid. It was so stupid, and that's the only thing I can think about.
I thought the first penalty was terrible and shouldn't have been called. The second one was super soft, but gets called a lot. Did he touch a quarterback in the head? If the answer is yes, then they can throw a flag and they're not wrong. But the first one to me was just an outrage. He tackled him or hit him, whatever, but he had his arm up around his neck. You know, right, probably like at the, almost like the chest plate where it says Saints on the top of the jersey at the V of the V cut.
Right.
There was no contact to the head or face mask. Let's go to Jermaine, who is in Bowie, home of the Bay Sox, on Grant and Danny. What's up, Jermaine? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
So, buddy.
Great stadium, by the way, too. Bay Sox is a great stadium.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
It is.
I've seen a lot of the great Orioles young players come through there over the years.
Yeah. So, I got a couple things. So, I mean, I want to feel good about this win, but I don't know. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. We've got to figure out a way to beat some of these bad teams. I mean, we're squeaking by teams that we should be, you know, really beating. We're a much better team than the Saints. you know, and we barely beat him. I can see divisional games, but this is one we should not have struggled with, you know, by one point. The other thing is, I don't know what's going on with the O-line. Our O-line, we struggled yesterday. It seemed like Daniels was under duress, you know, most of the day. And then Coleman seems to be struggling. And I wonder what's going on with the rotation. They used to have Lucas and Coleman rotate. You know, maybe that would help Coleman, but, you know, we just got to be more consistent. You know, good.
So a few things. You asked some really good questions.
Yeah, appreciate you, buddy.
I'm going to answer some of those things. Number one, Lucas, as recently as their last game, was starting at right tackle because Wiley was out and has been playing on the other side. So there's less of a rotation, obviously. He's also been getting a lot more practice reps over there because Wiley's been banged up. So there hasn't been as much time for him to rotate and practice with Coleman. There's also that Coleman was playing well enough, largely, as a rookie, that I think the rotation was just to kind of get him up to speed, and they felt like maybe he graduated to the point where they could play him every snap. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of Lucas mixed in to spell him and keep him fresher because it was working so well, because yesterday didn't go quite as well. And with Wiley back now down the stretch, I think they could probably do some of that. I agree with you, the O-line has not been nearly as good in the second half of the year as the first half of the year. Specific to yesterday, though, I think the biggest problem in terms of the pass rush was Daniels holding the ball. I thought, you know, time to throw, just being at the game, we were talking about it. I mean, there were several times where he held it longer than he normally does. The ball was not out as quickly. And part of the fact that they only had, like, six incompletions was the eight sacks. Like, you could throw the ball away more, and now all of a sudden you're 25 of 35 or whatever, instead of 25 of 31. And, you know, he chose to kind of hold onto the ball occasionally and take those sacks, which isn't always the wrong thing, but some of them were drive killers and problematic. The other thing to remember is, and this was not the end-all be-all, but they did not have their starting center, who has played at times at a Pro Bowl level, who has been one of their key cogs up front in Biotish. And they were playing Dieter, who's played in the league but who's played very sparingly this year. And I think that's part of the issue they had in pass pro, or maybe even running the ball. But I agree with him on this point. He's like, we got to beat these teams. Early in the year, when you played the Cardinals, you beat them 42-14. When you played the Browns, you beat them 34-13. When you played the Panthers, you beat them 40-7. They were whooping bad teams' asses early in the year. That has not been the case here lately. They did do that to the Titans, in fairness, but the score eventually was, you know, the game was a little closer than that early. But you give them that credit. Two of the three times they played bad teams here now of the last three games, they've lost outright, and they were two-point conversion away from losing again.
That's right.
So the trend is not what the early part of the season was in terms of playing above the bad team.
Yeah, I think that's well said. The outlier now is the Tennessee game. You know what I mean? Of the recent sample.
Right.
Previously, the outlier was, okay, they didn't play well or they didn't dominate the Giants, an inferior opponent. I know it's a divisional thing and there's different contexts there, but it basically was when you are playing someone that's beneath you, it looks like it. 42-14 against the Cardinals, 34-13 against the Browns, 40-7 against Carolina. These are dominant wins. You're exerting your will and you never let up. Now you've got one of those over your last three, and you've, as you said, you lost to Dallas, their worst game of the season, on probably on both sides of the ball, and very easily could have dropped this one here.
Somebody tweeted me at Grant H. Paulson, Danny's at Funny Danny, and he said, speaking of the roughing calls, Jaden got suplexed by Cam Jordan. There was no call. That's true.
Yeah,
Cam Jordan lifted him up and slammed him like he was Bubba Ray Dudley, putting someone through a table, and. By the way, good wrestling reference. Nothing here in the room. Nothing. Nobody. Okay.
Dudley boys.
Get the tables. Thank you, Danny. Uh-huh. But I thought in real time, I'm like, oh, that's definitely a penalty. Now, I don't think that should ever be flagged, just for the record.
I'm with you. Sure.
All like, let's play some football here. These guys signed up. They know what they're getting into.
Yeah, because if you let up, then the guy, you know, does a Pat Mahomes, like he flips it to Travis Kelce for 17 yards.
Yeah, if you don't slam him, Jaden does like, some crazy thing where he just like goes behind his back to, you know, Jeremy McNichols or whatever. But having said that, you see that get called all the time, and it did not. And in a game where you called those two super ticky-tack ones on Fowler, it was very odd that was not called.
Like those were pretty soft. That one wasn't soft. Like if we're doing soft, let's go ahead and flag that one too.
800-636-1067. Next, you know what I want to hit? What do you feel best about coming out of this game in terms of them as a likely playoff team? What areas of the team do you go, here's something that I actually feel better about after this win, and where are you actually now worried? mean, they've got tougher games coming up. They play a Eagles team that they will be somehow only a four-point dog to right now. And then they play a Falcons team that plays tonight. But assuming they don't lose to the Raiders, you know, they're not going to make the quarterback change to Penix, and they're still going to be trying to gun for the playoffs. That is a better team, more difficult team than this Saints team, clearly, even though that's a home game coming up in a couple of weeks. Grant and Danny with you live from Brennan's in New Orleans on The Fan.
Empty backfield once again. Daniels looking, moving to his left. Under pressure. Stays on his feet. And now he throws to the end zone and is caught for a touchdown by McLaurin.
Said that Terry McLaurin is playing phenomenal football for the Commanders, both sides, both coaches. And then just watch how far he is. He sees Jaden Daniels scrambling and there, arm up. Wow, gets after the football. Nice job. Terry McLaurin coming up big for Jaden Daniels.
Coming up at 3:45, our double play. We'll check in with our producers about their first trip to New Orleans. And at 4 o'clock, we are blitzing all around the Beltway today. The Caps, one of the great teams in the NHL right now, have a big game tonight on the road, trying to close in on an NHL record for consecutive road wins. We'll also cover the NFL after Week 15 and the Commanders with our buddy Michael Phillips all coming up on the Beltway Blitz. That is 30 minutes away from right now. Remember, at 5 p.m., Jay Gruden's on the show. We're going to give away Caps tickets at that time. You better be listening if you want to go see the Caps at home. Great atmosphere at Capital One Arena. That is right before Jay Gruden, right at 5 o'clock to the Caps-Rangers game on January 4th. That's a really, really good matchup. So make sure you're listening if you want those tickets. The phones are chock full. We'll get back to them in just a second. 800-636-1067 on the Commanders' one-point win over the Saints. They survived a mad dash from New Orleans in the fourth quarter. 12 unanswered points by the Saints in the final 11 minutes and 10 seconds of the game. And if it was 14 unanswered points on that two-point conversion, they would have lost. But, Danny, the question going into the break was, what in this game made you feel better about this team coming out?
Lattimore and his presence, even though he wasn't tested, it's the idea that they can do more now defensively. It gives them flexibility. Because other teams, now, the Philadelphia is going to be different. They've got a couple guys that can go get it. A lot of teams they might play. But the answer to me is they said, we are way better off going in a different direction entirely. Cutting off basically whatever you want to call it. Under Deion Sanders back in the day, it was half the field. I don't think half the field was eliminated for passing, but they were not going after Lattimore, which is a huge advantage for Joe Witt and company on defense. It tells you that you can now bet big on run plays on early downs. You can now bet big on a certain kind of rolling coverages in different ways and anticipate things and be more aggressive, which to me they had reserved only for bad offenses that had all but quit, like when they played Carolina or they played Cleveland. Then you let Frankie Louvu rush the passer pretty much every time, and those guys are feasting. You can now be more aggressive, and instead of having to be really choosy about when you pressure and when you kind of get up in guys' faces. The fact that they got Lattimore out there and the Saints had no interest in trying him tells me that may be the route the rest of the league goes.
I like that one a lot. I will say that the thing I feel better about coming out of this game is maybe that not having Noah Brown is not going to be a death sentence to the receiver room. And what I mean by that is I didn't think they were hurting to make plays in the passing game at all. They left some things on the field, but receivers were wide open. That was mostly Terry McLaurin. Mm-hmm. And that could have been three long catches, could have been touchdowns on any one of them. We talked about it. Now, that was a total of like 170 yards on those three throws that they couldn't connect on. But McLaurin was good. I thought Zacchaeus, he would have been basically 4 for 45, which is Noah Brown-like.
Yep.
Had they have caught the screen that got tipped at the end of the game that never made it to him. De'Ami Brown was 3 for 30. Would have been 4 for about 50 in the game, actually, with a big leaping catch to put the game on ice that got negated via penalty. Would have been a huge day for him. And then Jamison Crowder came back, did a nice job on punt returns. I actually feel a lot better about them from a punt returning standpoint with Crowder than I did Zacchaeus. Not that he was terrible, but he put the ball on the ground a couple times this year. Crowder went 3 for 27. They didn't really use Luke McCaffrey at all, but I thought having all those guys involved in the passing game by committee to replace Noah Brown makes me feel a little bit better about where things are going to be moving forward. Flip side of this is, where do you feel worse? I did not like that they couldn't run the ball.
Yeah, I'm alarmed.
Chalk that up to not having Biotish largely, and I'm going to just kind of wait until next week to really make any other major judgments. I'll kind of give them that excuse. But the Cowboys game, it happened too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's two out of the last three where you played awful run defenses and you could not run the ball unless Jaden Daniels was scrambling. That does give me some pause. I do not like that. The other thing I'll say is, and it's a very, very minimal worry because he has not been this guy all year, but that was the first time we've really seen Daniels hold the ball in a way that was somewhat debilitating occasionally. Eight sacks should never happen in this league. That is Sam Howell on a bad day stuff. Two of those were for zero.
That's broken Carson Wentz against Washington.
Yeah, so let's say it was like five or six sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's still way, way, way too many in a career high for him. So I want to get out of whatever that habit was. Let's make sure we leave that in New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go to your first point and expound on it. So to me, running the ball, two of their last three games against bad rush defenses, they couldn't run the ball. I'm alarmed. And here's why. So we talk about this all the time with there's a good offense, then there's the truly great offense, where if you stop them once, stop them twice, whatever, you'll be just fine because you've got, you know, an answer. You've got the Travis Kelce, you've got the playmaker, you've got some guy that can't be stopped. So even if you're in third and eight, third and nine, it ain't a worry. You're still going to go down and make the play. You can see the tremendous difference in their offense when they are not excellent on first down. The games where they've scuffled, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Dallas, and then yesterday, their first downs read like this. Jaden Daniels scrambles for 1 yard. Brian Robinson stuffed for 1 yard. Jaden Daniels left end for 1 yard. Brian Robinson for 2 yards. You go down the list, and no wonder, even though they held the ball, they did a lot of good things on offense. It's a struggle. It's a fight. When they're good on first down, everything flows from that. There's no way for a defense to stop everything. You saw it against Tennessee. You didn't see it against Dallas and now New Orleans yesterday by extension. And that's the thing I'm concerned about.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's hit the phones. 800-636-1067. Huge win for the Commanders. 20-19. Was not pretty, but they have the best record through 14 they've had since 1992. Let's go to Ian in Vienna on line 8, who's been waiting on G&D. What's up, Ian?
Two things can be true. I think anyone at the beginning of this season would take a potential 11-5 playoff type season with a franchise quarterback in your roster or on your roster. But at 7-2, the aspirations change dramatically to be a legit NFC contender. And as of now, all 9 wins, not one of them is against a team with a winning record. That's just a fact. Their losses have been to all good teams, minus the Cowboys. And then you have two really kind of miraculous close wins that could go either way, the Saints and the Bears. And so you're kind of left with, how do you evaluate this season? How do you evaluate right now? Because, look, they could get to 11 wins, 6 or 7 seed, and you can point the arrow up completely. But you can also say, man, this team, you feel like in some ways – could have been better and just hasn't been. Again, both things can be true. You can evaluate preseason expectations versus midseason expectations. But when you see the same trend over and over of second half defense, second half offense, second half kind of performance across a multiple array of games, everything comes into question. Play calling, motivation, Dan Quinn's reputation, Cliff Kingsbury's reputation, hitting a wall, all the above. There's probably some combination of everything in there. But, man, you walk away just like in the Bears win with maybe a little bit more euphoria because of the way the play ended. But this game felt like I heard the analogy of the guy with the police officer that didn't show up. You kind of feel that way. You're like, man, if the Saints had started Rattler and played like a normal game, that would have been completely different.
Yeah, you feel like you got lucky, for sure. Thanks for the call, buddy. I mean, there's a lot of truth to some of that. For me, it's really easy. Like, they are not what it looked like they were headed toward when they were 7-2 or whatever the record was early, where we thought they're as good as any team in the league. The only team better than them in the conference right now is Detroit. Like, they're a Super Bowl contender at this moment. That feels like a year ago.
Ancient
basically.
History now, yeah.
But what is the most important part of this year? It's not really about this year to me. I mean, if they make the playoffs, amazing.
Great experience.
If they win a playoff game for the first time since 2005, even better. That's now one of the great seasons of my lifetime, right? In terms of result. what's most important about this year is the draft pick of Jaden Daniels and whether or not you got the right guy. I would say right now you feel excellent about Jaden Daniels long term. That looks like a W in that storyline. You chose Dan Quinn, who didn't seem like he was your first choice, but they really liked him and thought he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say right now that looks like a very good choice. That they have a great staff that he put together. They're having a good season. I'm not telling you he's Vince Lombardi or Bill Belichick, but I would say at the beginning of the year there were some questions,
yep.
And so far it's been pretty good. Adam Peters, first time as a general manager, first draft class, first free agency. Is he as good as promised? Is this a guy that is as good as everyone said he was going to be? I would say right now that feels like a win. So like all of the things that matter the most to me have been smashing successes this year, and everything else, which we could talk about it all, and we do on this show for hours and hours every day, it's all worth discussing. But whether they finish 9-8 and miss the playoffs, mm-hmm. or whether they finish, 11-6 or something, the difference is minimal at the 10,000-foot view of it looks like you got your GM, your head coach, your quarterback for a several-year window here. Let's go to Riley and Laurel on Grant and Danny. You're locked into the Fan. What's up, Riley?
Hey, Grant. I just wanted to let you know off topic that I appreciate everything that you do. I listen to you all the time, but I also want to let you know that back in the day, I was at the FedEx Field, and I used to let the media in with you and your dad. And
oh, wow.
I saw you as a little kid coming in with your pencil, your paper, your everything. You was set up, and I was so impressed. I was like, wow, this is... I'm like, wow, okay. So just to see that and how you've evolved to where you are now, man, I just wanted to give you your flowers because
it was
really special for me to experience that when you were there and to appreciate dads that, take their sons out and do things for them like that. I was like that. And you were in there. You were getting every inch of everything that you could get.
He's
you
in there mixing it up, man. Like,
I appreciate it.
Holding his hand as high as it can go to talk to the 6'5" football players, a little kid.
Exactly. Yeah. He was holding it down. And I was like, wow, this little kid is getting it in. So
that's so,
so
cool.
I just, like I said, I just wanted to let you know that I was there and I saw and I let you in to those interviews that you had. And you know I'm not lying because you had your pen, you had your pad.
I remember it well.
Yeah.
I was 10 or 11, probably 12, so my dad had to drive me. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for
appreciate that, man.
I mean, that's touching, really. It's a great memory for me. And my father, who's not even a big sports fan, who he was just doing what he would have done for one of my other siblings, right? Just like helping me realize a dream. But thank you. That's fun to reminisce on, and that's very, very touching. That was a good time. 1999 was the first time I started going to games, going in the locker room, interviewing players. Now a quarter century ago, I feel like an old guy. But I remember him. If he was the one that let me into the locker room, I can picture it like it was yesterday. So thank you for that call. That's touching and really means a lot. Next, our double play, what's going on in our lives, nothing to do with sports. The Commanders, who have not been 9-5 since he was letting me into the locker room.
Since then, yes.
It was 8 years before that, the last time this happened, after their big win in New Orleans. We are at Brennan's in the French Quarter. We're flying back tonight. You're listening to The Fan.
Great effort all around by the Saints responding in this second half.
All right, here we go. Rattler for the win. He throws. It's incomplete. And the Commanders defeat the Saints 20-19.
Kenny Albert, Jonathan Vilma, the former Saint on the call at the Superdome yesterday in New Orleans. Washington surviving a scare, beating the Saints 20-19. Welcome back to Grant and Danny. Top of the hour, your Beltway Blitz on the Commanders, the NFL, and the Caps, who play a big game in Dallas tonight. But right now, it's time for our double play, driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal in the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. And with that in mind, let's get to the double play.
So, boys, I want to bring on our crack production team here, Rhino and Darius. You guys didn't get to experience New Orleans the first time, but you're getting to experience it this time. Just give me some general thoughts, philosophies, things that we've learned, things to do, things not to do. What do we got, boys?
Well, I will say this has, for one, been a phenomenal experience. Probably, I mean, one of the most best experiences I've ever had on a work trip to this point.
We're working very hard.
Yeah, we're working so hard.
So much work.
That's a lot of work happening. But for one, Bourbon Street was undersold to me. I don't think anybody properly told me how crazy it would be. Mm-hmm. It was just as crazy as anybody did tell me it would be, times 10.
And then some.
Yeah, times 10. It was unbelievable. People watching on Bourbon Street is quite a phenomenal.
That's a spectacle.
Best place to do people watching in the world.
I can't imagine people watching on Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras or Halloween, which is what our guy Stefan. Yeah, Stefan was telling us about last night. He was like, God, you got to come down during Halloween. It's an unbelievable.
Well, it's one of those cities where there's like seven of those. You go, you got to come down during Mardi Gras. You got to come down during Halloween. Yeah. You got to come down during Christmas. You got to come down during the third week in June just because, like,
I'll bet they do somebody okay does, on, you know, Cinco de Mayo. Too.
Right.
Oh,
like,
that's a good one.
There's nothing that it's because this whole place is that pageantry. You know, it's like.
Do you think they have any parties on. You know,
it's like Arbor Day.
Let's jump around March 17th.
Yeah, St. Patty's Day. Yeah. But it's like, it's just a Tuesday at 6 p.m. It's like, oh, there's the brass band for zero reason, just because it's New Orleans.
Yeah, we were eating at Brennan's in the dining room on Saturday night, and the big brass band came through playing.
A door swings open, and everyone's like, oh, that's so fun, New Orleans. And I'm like, yes! That's what they do.
That kind of stuff just happens. Uh-huh. And you even see that in the streets. It's New Orleans was an unbelievable experience.
Dad, what was your assessment of Clary's New Orleans performance?
it was I would say expected.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
I would
is
say expected.
Shots fired.
No. I mean, he's a young fella.
He is young.
He's a young fella young in New fella, Orleans. Yeah. He's gonna
so
come
you
down
would expect that he would be in the hotel room at 10 o'clock every night?
Oh, well, no. That part, no. That was disappointing.
I mean, I don't know who went out less, him or Danny.
Well, no. He went out last night. He was out.
He's claiming that.
Well, he's been banged up two times.
Yeah,
when,
two
when,
of the three
when
nights.
We were leaving to go out last night. He was going back to his hotel room and laughed at the idea that we would go out.
But then
for the second time in as many days,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, and then the first night, what was that? I guess that'd be Friday night.
Friday, yeah.
Yeah, he was out a little bit later than I was. So I think he held up well. I think
wow.
He was hungover.net when I saw him in the morning.
Yeah.
We were supposed to work out, and that guy
was roughed up. What an unbelievable turn of events to hear him getting put over here. For his New Orleans performance.
Uh-huh.
That is not what I was expecting. But then again, I'm talking to a guy who didn't leave his hotel room other than to eat dinner. And
wait, hold on. And lunch.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank
and
you.
Lunch. So he's like, yeah, Ryan, we had a great
Ryan
time.
Ryan went so hard.
Yeah. What'd you think, Clary?
I mean, New Orleans lived up to the hype. I mean, 2 days, we were here 4 days, I believe. Two of the 4 days, I woke up feeling like, just death from hurricanes to shots to huge ass beers. I mean, so many different things here in New Orleans that I would have never expected. I mean,
I would have never expected.
I did not expect New Orleans to be like this much of a party. Like, it's a party town. You go out and you drink, and I'm like, okay, like people do that in Arlington. They do that in California. Whatever you want, like people can do that wherever they go. This is different. I will never experience something like this again. Last night, 1 a.m., decided, you know what? I can't sleep. Let's go out to Bourbon Street. Packed. So many people trying to get beads and flashing, doing all different things. I mean, it was just a wild scene. And before you know it, I mean, I'm out until 3:30. And here I am now.
That, by the way, that's the phrase. Before I know it. Right?
Exactly.
Like, that's what New Orleans is to me. Is, like, at the times I've seen when I was actually, like, fun, like, going out after, you know, like, 7 or 8 p.m., I'd go, before I know it was 2 in the morning. And it's like, what did I just do? Like, I went to 7 different places. I'm somehow at a gentleman's club where there weren't that many gentlemen. Anyway, having a fun joke about the strippers. But yeah, like I go to these places and I'm like, what just happened? It's like the whole city is, and all of a sudden I lost track of 10 hours.
It's a good way to say it. Yeah. It was a blast. It's been a really, really good time. We roll deep down here too.
Oh yeah.
Ryan brought his girlfriend. I had the wife. Mm-hmm. Our boss came. So, we had a group wandering around of 8 and 9 at a time on Bourbon Street. And it was definitely memorable. We had a good run. So, glad that you guys had a winning first experience in New Orleans. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, guys. Seriously, thank you.
Of course. So what we wanted you to get out of it, whatever you wanted to get out of it. And if you guys go back feeling like you crushed it, then that's what matters. And I'm glad you guys had fun. All right, top of the hour, the Beltway Blitz. We will be giving away Caps tickets, remember, today at 5 o'clock ahead of Jay Gruden, who's about an hour out. But next, we're going to cover the NFL, the Commanders, and we've got to get to the Capitals, who play tonight as well with John Walton. That's all coming up on the Blitz on G&D.